How much will a COVID-19 vaccine help repair the global economy? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is out with fresh analysis today showing global economic growth may return to pre-pandemic levels next year as distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine becomes widespread. But Laurence Boone, chief economist at the OECD, explains the ongoing recovery will be uneven in some parts of the world due to stark inequalities the pandemic has worsened. And she argues continued financial support from governments will be needed for some time.
When you're in the middle of a fight, of a battle, and you see the cavalry arriving, you just don't stop fighting. You fight even more until the cavalry arrive and even after. And that's exactly how we should look at health policies and fiscal support. We have to double down on government support, not only on public health and vaccines, but also on the support to keep firms alive, people in jobs, so that we can navigate through this period until the vaccine is widely deployed with the minimum damage.
How do you factor in some of these permanent changes to the way the economy has evolved through this? For example, you know, people who don't want to or won't return to the office, the new ways of working that, you know, leads to fewer coffee shop visits or lunches out. What kind of long-lasting impact will that have on the global economy?
So I think at this stage, it's very difficult to have grand design about the world of tomorrow. What we're really concerned with right now is those who are actually most likely to be scarred for long. And that's the young people accessing the labor market for the first time. It's the kids in less favored neighborhoods who have missed school and run the risk of missing their entire studying life. It's also low earners. A lot of them are not fully employed and prospects have been devastated.
Do you think policymakers are doing enough to provide that support?
Well, I think that it was quite blatant with the crisis that there wasn't enough for health policy, there wasn't enough for education. So what we must do now is address that, not only on the income support, but also on the digital for low-income workers so that they can work more from home as well, or they can get the training they need. Digital for the kids, right? Professors are not equipped. Schools are not equipped. Kids are not equipped. We need to address this and plant the seed of a better world for tomorrow through addressing inequality today.
Laurence Boone, OECD Chief Economist, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, global shares are solidly higher this morning as drug makers continue to seek fast-tracked approval for coronavirus vaccines. Shares of Pfizer up just shy of 3% ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street. The company this morning and its partner BioNTech submitted their COVID-19 vaccine for EU regulatory approval. Persistent unemployment due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic could worsen global poverty, especially in service sectors that have been most affected by restrictions. The United Nations today said it expects the number of people needing help to increase 40% next year, and it's appealing for a record $35 billion for humanitarian aid all over the world. The BBC's Imogen Folks has that story.
The UN says COVID-19 has wreaked havoc in some of the world's most vulnerable regions. Livelihoods have been lost, food prices are rising, schools have closed and vaccination programs have been interrupted. Meanwhile, conflicts in Yemen, Syria or Afghanistan continue. There are food shortages in South Sudan and northeast Nigeria. The UN fears multiple famines next year. But the appeal comes as wealthy donor countries focus on domestic priorities. Britain has already said it will cut overseas aid in order to support its own economy through the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, the International Rescue Committee said the move couldn't come at a worse time and called on Britain to maintain its foreign aid commitments.
Imogen Folks reporting there. Well, as the UN calls for greater support, so too are local charities. Today has been dubbed Giving Tuesday, a movement that started back in 2012. The idea was to promote acts of giving after consumers spent billions on Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. Last year here in the UK, more than $10,000 a minute was donated on Giving Tuesday. But with the pandemic pinching pocketbooks more than usual for this time of year, what can charities expect to see today? Grania Matthews coordinates the Giving Tuesday initiative in the UK on behalf of the Charities Aid Foundation.
Obviously, we would love to see the same level of donations again this Giving Tuesday, or even more given the need at this time. But we absolutely recognise the difficult situations that many individuals, many families and many businesses are in. So while you may not have the financial capacity to give this year, you can also give your voice, you can share your skills, or you can even just share your favourite charity's message on social media.
Now, the strain on households, as we've been talking, has increased this year, but so has reliance on charitable organizations. Does that make this Giving Tuesday push even more important this year?
Yes, absolutely. We have found that charities have faced a significant increase in demand for their services this year, while over half have suffered a drop in donations.
And as you say, that research says that it's estimated charities face a more than $13 billion funding gap, and a quarter of them may not survive the year. So they have found some pretty creative ways to raise money this year, not just from individuals, but corporations as well, haven't they?
Yes, our businesses are incredibly generous. We have seen so many businesses support good causes, providing food donations throughout the lockdown to those people who were unable to go out and get shopping. We also have many businesses who are in a position to give this year and are supporting their charity partners through doubling donations. Lots of businesses won't be holding their annual Christmas party this year for their employees. And we have a campaign running from an incredible business called Christmas Party Heroes. And they're encouraging businesses to donate the budget for their Christmas party to their favourite cause. The total this morning was just over £1 million had already been donated.
Wow. Well, for all those who can and are donating, are there certain kinds of charities that people are gravitating toward this year?
Yes, we've seen a massive rise in donations to those frontline services. So lots of NHS charities, food banks, those community organisations who were stepping up to support people in the community who were isolating. But it's also really important to not forget those charities who are not on the front line, the environmental charities, the animal-focused charities, and those health charities that were not necessarily connected to the pandemic, but are still providing really important services.
Grainne Matthews, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.